It's been a century since Robert Frost published his little famous poem entitled The Road Not Taken, but its sentiment still rings true to our postmodern ears. Here are the first few lines. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked far down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Life has a way of presenting as a series of decision points, as moments of truth, or as forks in the road, with choices to be made, and with those choices come further decisions and consequences. When Jesus walks into the synagogue at Capernaum, presumably to worship there as he had countless times before, just off the banks of his familiar Galilean Sea, he is presented with a decision point, a moment of truth, a fork in the road, which, if he takes it, will change everything from there on. Mark's gospel captures this scene in just 8 short verses. There is a sense of urgency here. He has gathered up his disciples. He has been baptized into a new sense of ministry. And this is the launch of it, right here, right now. The gospel writer saw fit to use an ancient literary tool to create a pattern in these 8 verses. It's known as a chiasm. We formatted it in your service leaflet this morning so you could see it for yourselves. Bible nerds think this kind of stuff is really cool. Guilty as charged. A chiasm, from the Greek letter chi or X, is a crossing, a crossroads, where in this case the first line is paired with the 8th. And the 2nd verse is paired with the penultimate verse, and so forth and so on. And there is movement here, each pair of verses serving a purpose to the whole. The first and the last, 21 and 28, have a sense of immediacy. It's there in both of them, bookending the passage. 22 and 27 have this force of amazement of what's going on. 23 and 26 are about the crying out that happens. Literally, the Greek word means to squawk like a bird. And then in the pith of it, 24 and 25, there is the engagement at hand. And these chiasms occur in various parts of the Bible, but also in the epics, the Iliad and the Odyssey, in Beowulf, and in Paradise Lost, presumably to aid the herald telling the story orally that they can remember it. But scholars note a high literary quality to these tools because they convey layer upon layer of meaning for those who would listen. Chiasms are designed to crack the story open and invite us in with immediacy and amazement, and the clamoring, and the engagement. But we can also see this chiasm as a crossroad for Jesus here. We were told in last week's passage, the one just before this, he's just a simple man from Nazareth. And nothing good can come from Nazareth. He's a backwater boy, a low means, and little education. How could he possibly don his prophetic mantle with any sense of authority? And yet here he stands. He can do no other, and people see it. Much has been written about the difference between power and authority. One can have power to influence the lives of others, to bend to their will. And often power comes expressed as coercion, by highlighting the consequences. If you don't do what I say, you will suffer. If you do not comply, there will be consequences. Coercion comes in the form of power. Some leaders rule by power, but rarely does history record them as good leaders. Authority, on the other hand, involves a claim of legitimacy that is bestowed upon the leader by others, so that the leader's use of power carries with it this sense of moral authority even. Authority elicits the response desired from others, but not in a coercive way, because the relationship is grounded in some way with respect and trust that others will follow that person with authority. Let me give you an example from history. Two presidents. Richard Nixon had great power given the office he occupied, but he possessed little legitimate authority to use it in the waning days of his presidency, and his abuse of power led to his downfall. Abraham Lincoln, on the other hand, had immense authority vested in him, not just in the office, in him to lead our country through its darkest hour and change the course of this country forever. Both men were presented with chiasms, forks in the road, and the choices and consequences that followed shaped their lives and their legacies and all who would be affected by them. Now, I would suggest, and this is, I think, the critical part, decision points like this, like those two presidents and we all have in our lives, are at their core not political, not social, not physical, but ultimately grounded in the spiritual work of caring and concerning about those decision points and how it impacts other people. We could say, as people of faith, it is the spiritual work down in that engagement, the spiritual work to have the capacity for compassion and mercy, which are attributes of God that we claim as people of faith, and if of God, then values worthy of our embrace in our own lives too. When Jesus steps into this chiasm of the healing story, he is immediately noted to have to be one having authority. But only when he goes deeper than that, when he engages the man possessed by the demon, he then uses his authority and the undergirding power of love that he possesses and the mercy and compassion that he has. Those are the means by which he heals them, knowing that word would spread and his life would change, even if he wasn't ready. In the crux of the moment, in these middle verses, 24 and 25, there is spiritual engagement there. He is named by a demon, and he exercises his power to heal the man. It's worth noting that Jesus had no political power, no military force standing behind him, no wealth to his name, no prestige in his society, none of the normal props for the powerful. And the fact is, throughout the Gospels, he resists bending people to his will by coercing them, choosing instead simply to invite them into another way, to embrace his proposition of living according to these values, to engage them as one having authority, spiritual authority, which at its core is about mercy and compassion and love. It has been said that Christendom, the church's alignment with worldly and political power from the 4th century and Constantine on, Christendom died about 50 years ago. Precisely because it accumulated worldly power and used it to bend people to its will. And people finally said, enough, we don't want that. The centuries are strewn with the victims of abuse and war waged by the church in God's name. And I, for one, think it is a really good thing that Christendom has died, or at least is dying. because Christianity in its purest form, the kind that Jesus invites us into, Christianity in its original form, can once again approach our chiasms of spiritual work presenting to us in the world in which we live. And we might just be able to do it like Jesus if we resist the trappings of power that will trip us up still, if we choose to believe that the only thing that will overcome power is more coercive power. The question for us as the church, as Christians who follow this man we call Jesus in this place and time, the question is for us, by what authority do we stand and speak and act in God's name? By what authority do we speak prophetically in the face of corrupting power in this place and time? And the fact is, if we speak and act untethered by those deep-seated guideposts of mercy and compassion and love, if we lose them as our spiritual rudder, then we will drift and stray. We will lose our way, leaving these chiasms of our spiritual work fractured and in disarray, and there will be no authority in our voice. But if we stay true to those values, we will surely find our way, friends. We will live into that authority which the world is desperately longing to give those who will lead courageously and with compassion, drawing inspiration from our common humanity, our love for the world, for all of creation, and being inspired by our loving and merciful Creator in whose image we are made. Frost ends his poem with the invitation to parse our lives by the choices that come our way. Here are the last three lines. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. There's the invitation. Look for the chiasms of spiritual work in your lives. Let us look for them together. Let us consider what it means to claim our authority as ones demonstrating compassion and mercy and love in God's name. And if we will, then the world will change. The world will change. No power will stand in the face of that.